Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and today we have a special program featuring the winners of the 2016 Writers Cafe Contest, sponsored by the Writing Center of the University of Pittsburgh. With us today are five writers reading their winning pieces of poetry, fiction, and nonfiction. We'll also talk with writer Barbara Edelman, who will tell us about the Writers Cafe and the Writing Center. Barbara Edelman is a lecturer in English at the University of Pittsburgh, where she coordinates the Writers Cafe. She's the author of two poetry chapbooks. Her full-length collection, Dream of the Gone From City, will be published by Carnegie Mellon University Press in the spring of 2017. Hi, Barbara. Congratulations on your new book.
Thank you, Jan. It's great to be here.
I want to talk about your book, but we'll talk about the Writers Cafe. We'll talk about your book another time, but it's such great news.
Thank you.
So you've been working with the Writers Cafe for a number of years now.
Yes.
How many?
Five.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you tell us what it is?
Sure. So the Writers Cafe is an informal, I wouldn't call it a workshop. It's geared toward Pitt students, but everyone is welcome. We get people from the community of all ages, from different universities, as well as writers who have been around in Pittsburgh for a long time, to come in and write in response to prompts, and usually to share their work. And the cafe is facilitated each session by one or two writers and teachers, some local, some who actually travel in from out of town. We have a great variety of facilitators, and it's a program that was really developed by Ellen Smith, the poet, who is a lecturer at Pitt also, and she really got it going, and now it's truly expanded, and it's very exciting.
Yeah, it is a great program, and I know you get nationally known writers coming in.
We do. Sherry Flick did a session this term, as did poet Terrence Hayes. Dinty Moore came from Ohio, the nonfiction writer.
So it's fiction, poetry, and nonfiction.
Correct. All those genres. We've also had sessions in playwriting. And the contests that we do are in the three genres, poetry, fiction, and nonfiction.
Okay, so this year's contest, who are the judges for that?
All three judges this year teach at Pitt, but none of them teaches creative writing, so they would not have seen the work of any of the contestants. Ronna Edelstein is our judge in nonfiction, and she's published her nonfiction in various journals and the Washington Post. Our fiction judge is Keely Bowers, who has an MFA in fiction from the University of Pittsburgh. She teaches there and at CCAC. She's a prize-winning fiction writer. And our poetry judge, Nancy Corbel, who's a writer and editor who has taught at Pitt for many years.
I want to thank you for all the work you've done. I know it's a lot. In addition to your teaching and your writing, and somehow with all this, you've gotten your book out. So that's
thank you.
That's an accomplishment.
Well, I want to thank you for this opportunity to have so generously offered us this space. I mean, they get money for winning prizes in the contest, which is also terrific. But I think this is an excellent opportunity for students to get to read on the radio, to get their pieces heard by, you know, their not just their family and friends, but people they don't know. And I also just want to say, in terms of the Writers Cafe, how important it is to have had the work of Gita Kotari, who directs the Writing Center at Pitt, and Jean Grace, who's associate director of the Writing Center, who has also done our terrific flyers, our posters. Julianne McAdoo, who assists me with the Writers Cafe. Robert Stevens, who handles media for the writing program at Pitt. He's done a lot to help us advertise. And Ethan McElhaney, who's a Pitt grad, who's also helped us with social media. And Sandy Foster, administrator at the Writing Center, who does all the work.
Okay, well, as usual, you know, there's a lot of people behind something like this, so thanks for letting us know who they are. Our first place poetry winner is Andrew McGuire for his poem, I'm Cold. Andrew McGuire is a junior computer science major specializing in database architecture and back-end web development. He works as a semi-professional multi-instrumentalist, performing both original and cover material throughout the southeastern Pennsylvania area surrounding his hometown of Wyomissing. Hi, Andrew. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Okay, congratulations. You're a computer science major winning poetry contest, huh?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's all language, and humans just have the capacity to appreciate its beauty, so.
Okay, well, I don't appreciate the beauty of computer language, but that's just me, so
Why don't you go ahead and read?
Sure. So this first one, as you said, is called I'm Cold, and it's inspired by the novel Atonement. March, with shrapnel in my side, dragging an M1 to Sandy Calvary Denomah. March, though iambic hexameter tattles on each devastating pace. March, a smooth pale leg, as disembodied as my esoteric heart in a grown-up tree. March, with mothers and children and mushroom cloud aneurysms. March, until crosshairs make love and paint pretty pictures in the mud. All right. My next one is called The Dark, Warm, Narcotic American Night, which is a line from a Tom Waits song. All he is two suitcases. One for the moldy bootleg melted to the limping claw of a rusted machine. One for the B-side psychoanalysis scrapped in the stained institution of yesterday's jeans. But they're both for his faded hope. A hope for vegan utopian bicycle days and sensuous catharsis narcosis nights. A hope that drags behind him like some reeking expired shadow. Together they march with duct tape lips and votive candles in protest of this week's in vogue injustice. Now when the tape swishes down the diner toilet each night, he is silent. He used to have a voice, but that expired too. Now he just grunts, drools, weeps, sleeps. Now it's the smoothie of decaffeinated dregs and Prozac and iceberg lettuce that cries, America, I've given you all, and now I'm nothing. Nothing but two suitcases and a faded hope. This last one is, it's called Synesthesia. I think about life as a vinyl record, as feeling every parallel halo in orbit around the hollow in my heart. I'm played with an overdriven rose, warped and gashed through by the only touch I'll ever know. My veins are pumped with liquid cathode noise, crackling pulses whispered from an anxious fire that has burned for a generation now. Fueled by the dust of some tragically romantic supernova. I am a billion synaptic echoes, self-oscillating in warm recursion, shimmering beneath the stars, shimmering within the eyes of someone who will never fade away in such soft blue light. If memory is the infinite reverberation of existence, then I know why my brain rattles and sparks against all these asylum feedback walls. I dream a revolution per minute.
That was Andrew McGuire, first place poetry winner from the Writers' Cafe contest. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guests today are the winners of the 2016 Writers' Cafe contest from the University of Pittsburgh. The first place fiction winner in the Writers' Cafe contest is Katie Mullins for her story entitled Cassie. Katie Mullins is an English writing major at the University of Pittsburgh, with minors in education and music, and a certificate in children's literature. She's graduating this spring when she will be moving to Tulsa, Oklahoma, to serve with City Year, a branch of AmeriCorps. Hi, Katie.
Hi.
Congratulations. This is a really nice thing.
Thank you very much. It's a wonderful opportunity.
Yeah. Go ahead. You're going to read your story.
Right? Yep. All right. This is a piece called Cassie. My mother reaches forward and clicks off the radio. I see her flex her hands around the steering wheel, pushing her wedding band up off her knuckle. I'm in the back seat of our van, my knees pulled up and pressed on the back of the driver's seat. Her eyes meet mine in the mirror for a brief moment. She inclines her head toward my father. How much farther? She asks. My father glances down at the map and flicks his wrists to fold it toward himself. He pushes his glasses up in the same way every time, with his pinky, one smooth motion that perches them on the bridge of his nose again. Few more miles, he says. He returns to staring out the passenger window, his chin resting on his knuckles. Street lamps throw his face into focus with every few feet, lighting his glasses and catching on the surface of his large golden watch. Our house is filled with portraits of him, painted by my mother before he needed glasses. His knees are angled away toward the door, his shoulders rounded over his chest. In a few minutes, I can see Uncle Bill's porch light ahead, a lone figure sitting under it. As we pull up, he walks to the curb to meet us, rolling his suitcase. He sits down next to me in the back seat. I glance up at the mirror. My mother's lips are pressed tight, small ridges forming perpendicular to the line. She pulls away the moment he shuts the door. He reaches out to me and we hug sideways. I heard my parents arguing about this in the kitchen after dinner. I had been on the phone with my friend Aaron talking about our swim club when their voices carried up the stairs. I crept over to the banister to listen. How will Cassie feel? She'll have to leave her room for the summer. It's just until he's better. So how long? He's just in a bad place right now. Silence. Then, he's my brother. In the car, Uncle Bill touches his fingertip to my nose like he always does, saying, "How's it going, Peanut?" I catch a sharp whiff of rubbing alcohol. I try to snatch his finger, the gesture bringing a smile to his face. The tradition is comforting. My mother's eyes flick back to me. I sneak glances at my uncle when he turns his face to the window. He looks like my father, but his features are softer, older but filled out. While my father has stayed pinched thin, Uncle Bill has rounded in both face and stock. His thick fingers clasp in front of his belly. Erase a few lines and carve out his jaw, and there is my dad. The same ridged nose, the same parentheses around the mouth, the same crinkles around his eyes when he smiles at me. Uncle Bill's stomach has grown since Christmas. He pushes his glasses up with his pinky, rests his head on his window, and closes his eyes. I help my mother carry Uncle Bill's suitcase up to my room. I grab a change of clothes and take them to the room that was once my mother's studio. Her art supplies are packed in the corner, covered by the enormous gray tarp she used to lay her paintings on. My father has unfolded the sleeper sofa for me, put sheets on it, and placed my pillow in the middle. "Looks comfortable enough," my mother says. She's plumping my pillow, adjusting the corner of the fitted sheet. I nod, chewing on my lip. "How long is he staying?" I ask. She looks at me, but she is illuminated from behind by the light of the window, leaving her face in shadow. "I don't know," she says. "Ask your father." She pulls the covers up around me, then shuts the door without a sound as she exits. The studio looks out over the front of the house. I can hear the noise from the street, a soft roar as every car passes, a sound very different from the buzz of the crickets out back. My mother's easel, the only thing not covered by the cloth, stands in the corner. It holds a still life in the early stage of sketching. It has begun to fade, but it looks real, as though the penciled fruit might one day be edible. When I close my eyes, I can see the easel on the backs of my eyelids.
That was Katie Mullins, first place fiction winner in the Writers Cafe contest. Thank you.
Thank you.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guests today are the winners of the 2016 Writers Cafe contest from the University of Pittsburgh. The first place nonfiction winner in the Writers Cafe contest is Margaret Mass for her essay entitled Plants and People. Margaret couldn't be here today, but we wanted to make sure to congratulate her. Next, we'll hear from second place poetry winner Kyle Hoke for his poem Columns, I Suppose By Their Nature Stand Stoically. Kyle Hoke is a senior at Pitt, majoring in political science and economics, graduating in May. He's originally from Westchester, Pennsylvania. Hi, Kyle. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for being on. Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it. All right. So the title of my first poem is called Columns, I Suppose By Their Nature Stand Stoically. I'd rather sway as a breezed palm harboring coconuts, hair grazing forehead, fronds chittering secret languages the trunk cannot understand. When it bends closer to hear the little whispers, this is the nature of things. Leaning to learn there is something beyond learning. A seabird slips down upon the evening horizon. Weathered strands tease the crests of my ears, and women drift silently into view. L'air bleu. Moment of coalescence, moment bereft of body, desires spread thinly as a veil. Dangling pearls of cream color, soft skin, I want to listen in to the way they graze the tendons of her neck, world around us calling and crashing, wringing its tense threads. Though I can never imagine her complexion without strain. I should turn instead to the sea, whose salted winds will cleanse these imperfections. The origin of the pearls is there, of the people, and of the palms, speaking. Okay, the title of this next poem is called Euthanization. We were simply going forward, riotous and windswept up grassy-wide Flagstaff in Shenley, city sirens clanging toward us from the solemn hum of isolated Pittsburgh behind, thoughts of cheap beer cans, liquor, sweaty brick alleyways, satisfying baser needs in homes built by 1940. Some dream, exempt from rigor, exempt from pedagogy, exempt from learning that all it knows is what it learned in class, which it learned in class. There must be some more humane way to go about killing us. Take the spear from the back of the bleeding deer you've seized. Let it run back scared into the park's woods, say, back where its mother was. It will survive the night. It will stand tall one day on top of grassy wide Flagstaff in Shenley, look out on the city, and realize that it is a deer. Okay, my next poem is titled To Pittsburgh. I'm driving to Pittsburgh, squinting at a deer that has been deposited by a mile marker, speeding so as not to wince at the rigor mortis of the animal, whose last gasp resulted in a somewhat comical facial expression, whose intestines are mixed with gravel, and whose tongue has been licking asphalt for days, judging by, well, the rotting appearance of the body. And it's as if I am caught in a circle, really just orbiting the deer, being pulled in by its gravity. And the longer I stay in orbit, the stronger the stench of the deer, being dragged in, its eyes rolling back into its head, turning gray and gelatinous, really decaying now, flies beginning to obsess, covering the white fur of the belly. They would be consuming its eyes if the wings of the vultures were not shielding them for their own hungered enjoyment, pecking holes. And of course, I take a different route. I get off at this exit, Breezewood, and drive through the franchised strip that has gathered along the main road. I stop at a Sunoco, get gas and candy, and a white truck passes by, the sides dotted with silver bolts, and the smell of the exhaust, well, it's enough to bring my hand to my mouth as I hold my breath. And I'm thinking they should really find a way to make truck exhaust less stinging, because it's really stinging my nostrils. Thinking about being away from this hick town where the people are too nice for their conditions, let's be honest. But I start to cough when I remember to start breathing, and this reminds me of the Port Authority buses in Pittsburgh that run every day till 2 a.m. about how I need to get back to Pittsburgh for the same reason I left.
That's Kyle Hoke reading his poetry. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Next, we'll hear from second place winner in fiction, Elizabeth Souter, with her story, The Bray Arrowhead Collection. After a stint in the aftermarket book industry, Elizabeth Souter now studies fiction writing at the University of Pittsburgh. She's interested in the intersection of intimacy and illness, the dynamics of monastic life, and the diminishing role of nature in popular culture. She's working on a novel. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much, Dan.
Okay.
The title of my story is The Bray Arrowhead Collection. Even as she had watched Eugene scramble from the sleek black SUV and wander down the weedy path to the old farmhouse with his dad and brother, she had known the boy would find some excuse to beg off hunting, and her intuition had borne out. Now she sat with Eugene at the round kitchen table, its curling grain worn smooth from the oil of generations of Bray fingertips, while her brother and nephew were out stalking deer in the cold woods behind the house. Savory heat from the oven warmed the cool room. A wooden box nestled in the thin waves of the threadbare table runner, and Fran felt the blood rush from her hands as she reached inside the box and stroked the fluted stones that lay against each other in anarchy. Eugene had brought out the box from his bag, the dull knocking of delicate stone on delicate stone making Fran cringe, but the arrowheads were unchipped when she pulled the lid from the box's tight lip. her practiced eye quickly found the arrowhead that glimmered in the gray light from the window. Did Jake know that his son had carried the box back to the farm? Outside, Jake and Wayne were wrangling the rotting barn door open. They had unwound the yards of clothesline she used to tie it shut, her brother finally cutting through the last loops that fixed the planks to the jamb. Jake had no patience. "When you were little, you found this one down along the slope behind the barn," she said to her nephew. The beveled triangle felt warm in her hand. "I have no idea how you saw it, buried as it was in the grass." "I remember. In his lap sat Chalmers, her orange fur rippling under Eugene's excited fingers. Eugene's cough had disappeared as soon as his dad had gone outside. I was playing with the kittens when I found it." Chalmers stood and arched her butt as Eugene drummed her narrow rear. "There's no kittens in the barn anymore." Fran held the arrowhead to the window. A gleaming white vein streamed diagonally across its surface, sparkling in the light. "Bifurcate, flint from the ridge to the southwest of us, a touch of chalcedony, 9,000 years old." They considered the ancient thing. "No use for all those cats if there's no hay in the barn." She didn't mention Chalmers' kittens, which she had shut in her high third-floor bedroom. Their mewling was quiet enough that it seemed unlikely to be heard, and she would return them to the barn once her brother had left. She thought she had found them all, but Jake and Wayne's presence in the barn was churning her guts. Her heart thudded dully as she examined the arrowheads. Fletched ash tabulas were strewn everywhere. A 300-year-old diorite pentagonal was jumbled in with much older dovetails in one compartment, and in another, a single diagonal notch had just taken up with the jewel-like bottlenecks. This would never do. "Once I had all of this arranged by date, see the labels?" The oven buzzed, and Fran crossed the squeaky linoleum floor to pull her casserole from the old gas stove. Creamy chicken and rice. "Dad said you went to school to study arrowheads." "Well, not just arrowheads. I learned about bones in prehistoric people and how dirt can tell us about the ways people once lived. Dad said maybe I could do the same thing." "Your father said that?" Her brother disparaged her academic trajectory every chance he got, especially now that she was unemployed and living alone back on the farm. "What's for lunch?" asked Eugene. "It smells good." He rose and walked to the kitchen window. Past the tufted hemlocks that grew over the Indian burial site, the neighbor's gas well blew flame in the gray air. Snow had started to shiver through the sky. The arrowheads shone like diamonds in the light.
That's The Fiction of Elizabeth Souter. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jen.
It's nice. Our next reader is the second place nonfiction winner, Shannon Kelly, for her essay entitled Into the Confessional. Shannon Kelly is a sophomore creative writing major and political science minor at the University of Pittsburgh. She grew up in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, where she started writing at age 14. She mainly writes fiction and hopes to one day write for magazines or late-night talk shows. Hi, Shannon. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. So go ahead with your story.
This is titled Into the Confessional. I drive to a graveyard and sit in my car. I write in my journal until my cell phone rings next to me. My mother asks where I am. I tell her I am driving home. The flickering lamppost was bothering me anyway. Thoughts I am trying to avoid. What if you don't forgive someone before heaven? What if you're mad at them? Do they still make an appearance? Do we lash it out up there, among the creators, or do we leave all the problems with our bodies and let the earth rot them away? The accounts of Jesus' life are a mess. There are many versions, and not one his. A whole life through the words of others, and we'll never know if this bothered him. A fight between a stepfather and a daughter. I can't write about this yet, and I'm sorry. I wish I could tell you the whole story. I wish that Mark and John and Luke and Matthew were here to record everything faithfully so I could just live. A tear drops into your green beans your dad cooked. Break yourself open, cry at dinner. My mother lost an ocean's worth of water the day I was born, but not in the way that her water broke. I took all the water with me. I wouldn't want it going to waste. I would want the water for myself. When you are young and your parents are Catholic, you will get baptized. Since you are too small to make a conscious decision about your spiritual life, your parents will take responsibility until you are of age to make a choice. Here's what the minister will say. Father, in baptism, we use your gift of water, which you have made a rich symbol of grace you give us in this holy sacrament. My dad used to call me a fish. I would stay in our pool for hours floating around when I was little. My astrological sign is Cancer, a water sign. I love showering. Sometimes I'll stand in the water for too long, and I swear I'm an environmentalist. But feeling serene, like water is running through me instead of over my skin, like the water is washing over cellulite, like a river running over rocks, I swear I could stand there all day. I cry a lot. Water is my enemy in that way. At the very dawn of creation, your Holy Spirit breathed on the water, making them the wellspring of all holiness. I burst into tears today. I was talking to my father on the phone, and he mentioned how he thought of me while reading an article about how intelligence is linked to sarcasm. And the thought of him at home without me, reading the Times, it does something to me. I cried outside the public library and waited afterwards until I was sure my eyelids were not red anymore. Water goes, you take so much of me. I need more from you. After I cry, I'll feel how smooth my cheeks are, the salt closing my pores, and I'm thankful water feeds me like this earth. It was the first time I tried smoking. My roommate recorded everything I said that night. It ranged from, I'm a spy, to, I feel like God. What really freaked me out were not the things coming out of my mouth, but how happy I was. I said, I feel like I could touch infinity right now. And I stretched my arm out into the middle of the room and stroked an invisible wall. Then my roommate said, I've never seen you this happy before. I started to cry. I started to cry for so long it seemed like it would go on forever. I cried so long my stomach started to get sore from the hard breaths I was taking in. I want to be happy again, I sobbed. She tried to calm me, but it was like a dam broke inside my brain that night. My pillow soaked. I cried myself to sleep. I wish I wrote down what infinity felt like, because I feel like I might never touch it again. We ask you, Father, with your power to send the Holy Spirit upon the water of this front, may all who are buried with Christ in depth of baptism rise also with him to newness of life. We ask this in your name. Amen.
That's the work of second place nonfiction winner Shannon Kelly. What a great voice in that piece.
Thank you.
Yeah, nice Thank work. You. This has been the writing of the winners of the 2016 Writers Cafe Contest, sponsored by the University of Pittsburgh Writing Center. This year's fiction prizes were made possible by an anonymous donor in honor of Dr. Jed Putnam. Thanks so much to everybody for being here today. You've been listening to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty. Sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Saturday morning at 6:30 for Prosody. 90.5 WESA.